Now that the game is done, it's our time to check in.
Well, Giannis has said, wherever this is going tonight, I'm not through giving it everything I've got.
Bucks Talk starts now.
It is a 122-99 loss for the Bucks. A ghoulishly frightful loss on Halloween for Milwaukee tonight in this 56th all-time meeting between the Bucks and the Grizzlies.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios, here's Justin Garcia.
Well, not a whole lot to say after this one. A very disappointing performance, and even more disappointing start to the season for the Bucks, who dropped to 1-4 on this young campaign. And I just mentioned it, that is tied for the worst record in the Eastern Conference. It is potentially going to be tied for the worst record in basketball, albeit through five games. Not where you want to be. And those teams that you're now in the conversation with, the Jazz, the Pistons, the Raptors, that's not the company you hope to keep. I think there was a lot to take from this one, but it's a lot of what we've already said through the first four games. And I think you heard some of that frustration from Doc Rivers after the game. We've had the Chris Middleton discussion several times. The Bucks aren't 1-4 because Chris Middleton hasn't played. You know, I get the frustration that is there with some Bucks fans. They're going to be better with Chris Middleton on the floor. But, you know, these five games are not explained by Chris Middleton's absence. And that's the other part that has to be soul-searching for this group. It's not like they got old overnight, but I think a lot of the pushback that you heard and a lot of the skepticism around this team was partially the injuries that we had seen for the past few seasons, the fact that they're on their third coach in a very, very short span of time. You know, the trade that sent Drew Holiday to Portland and eventually Boston and brought you Damian Lillard, it's not to relitigate that trade. Would things look better if you didn't make that trade? Defensively, sure. But there's just a lot going on with this group right now, that it's not one thing. It's not one trade. It's not one stat. There's a lot. It's not one singular thing to point to. And that's what makes it even more pressing, even though you're five games into the season. You know, I mentioned this a couple of times, but the shooting numbers for the Bucks, especially from the outside, have been putrid. But every team goes through those stretches throughout the year where you have a rough couple of games, three, four, six games, just can't hit shots. Every team has that. Multiple times. Unfortunately for the Bucks, it's come in their first five or four of their first five games right out the chute. And even more unfortunate is the fact that that's not the lone reason for this 1-4 record. It's not just, hey, the Bucks just couldn't hit shots. They couldn't. But in three of those games, your opponent wasn't either. Like, really, the only shooting outlier performance game for the opponent, and I hesitate to even call it an outlier, but the closest thing to that was the Bulls game. Other than that, it wasn't like teams were highly efficient or shooting at a high percentage from three. The same issue is what we witnessed for most of last season. The Bucks, as constructed, still have not come up with a good way to defend the perimeter. And again, while some components of your team are going to look better when this team is fully healthy, when Chris Middleton is back, I don't think that's going to be one of those things taking a massive step forward. You know, maybe the fact that it means the way that you use Torian Prince changes. Maybe it means you reduce his minutes. Maybe you can serve a little bit more. Maybe you pick your spots more. But at this stage in his career, Chris Middleton is not a wing stopper. You know, it's the chemistry, and it's just being a glue guy for the team and helping boost your half-court offense. But those haven't been the biggest issues. It remains athletic teams just beating you mercilessly at the point of attack. I mean, at one point tonight, and I didn't see where they finished, but this should be the most alarming, most startling stat you hear all year, hopefully. At one point tonight, through halftime, even early in the second half, the Memphis Grizzlies had an offensive rating of 200 in transition. So what that means, your offensive rating is based off of 100 possessions. So in other words, if I give you 100 possessions, how many points are you going to score? If we say the Bucks have a 116.4 offensive rating, it means if I give you the ball 100 times, you're going to score 116.4 points. So for Memphis to have a 200 offensive rating in transition means if I give you the ball 100 times, you're scoring 2 points every single time. Doesn't matter if you shoot 70%. You are more than likely not going to win that game. And that is really where all of these issues start. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. I would assume if you weren't already there, there is certainly going to be quite a bit of panic going on. It's one thing to lose to the Bulls, to the Nets. And I even heard people try to explain it of, you know, it was disappointing and all, but those losses don't look quite as bad when you've seen what those teams have gone on to do. The Nets just took the Nuggets to overtime. Nets won another game. Look at what the Bulls are doing. They're shooting more threes, too. That's all well and good, but the fact of the matter is your schedule does not get any easier. And realistically, you are staring a 2-8 or 3-7 start directly in the face when you look at what's in front of you. Cavs at home, Cavs on the road, Jazz at home, Knicks on the road, Celtics at home. Right? Then your schedule starts to transition a bit and starts to get into the quote-unquote easy stretch. But in that same easy stretch before, we saw the Bucks go 0-2 to the Bulls and the Brooklyn Nets. That easy stretch, by the way, Raptors at home, Pistons at home, Hornets on the road. And you close out the month of November with the Rockets, Bulls, Pacers, Hornets, Heat, Wizards, Pistons, Hawks. I mean, now you're getting into early December. After you have that game against the Celtics on November 10th, the next game you have against somebody you would deem, I suppose I would put the Pacers in there, but someone you would deem as a contender is the Celtics, December 6th. So you do have that stretch. The big thing, though, is where are you going to be in the standings by the time you get to that stretch, right? You can't win a division. You can't win a conference in terms of regular season in the month of November, October. But you can do a lot of damage towards losing that and to putting yourself in a very big hole, especially when you see what's going on with the rest of the conference. Teams that had a bit of a sluggish start, and look, it's still a week plus into the season. But teams, I mean, you're going to see it every time. Oh yeah, this team's 0-2 or this team's 1-3, and then you gradually start to pull yourself out of it. You hope that's what tonight was, and especially when you saw no Desmond Bane, no Luke Kennard, no Marcus Smart. But it was just more of the same. And look, whether it's, well, this team plays to the level of their competition, I think we saw that for roughly three quarters against the Celtics. I mean, you saw that on opening night, maybe not so much to the level of competition, but just to the situation. Do they need that? Maybe, but it's not an enviable spot to be in, especially with the way that Cleveland has looked. You got to figure it out fast. I mean, that's really the story here, because this has a very real danger of starting to slip away now. 855-616-1620, the number to join us. More after this, we'll hear some of your thoughts, a couple of text messages trickling in. We'll get to all of that after this on Bucks Talk.
This is Bucks Talk. Welcome back to Bucks Talk.
One and four start to the season for the Bucks, who got manhandled by the Memphis Grizzlies. It's not even anything that's been uncommon so far this season, and especially not against Memphis, a team the Bucks have not beat for, I believe, 3 years now. But, you know, you go back to that Bulls game, and what stood out was not only the Bulls' three-point shooting, but their lack of scoring in the paint. And I think that's one of the numbers that'll get kicked around a lot, where you think, I don't know what to make of this. Is it showing improved play from the Bucks, or is there something else here? And when you look at paint production by the opponents, the Bucks have been okay so far this season. They're giving up 46 points a night, which isn't a massive number. And it's right around the middle of the pack in the league. But it's not scoring in the paint. It's touching the paint that have been the issue for this defense, that has been the issue for this defense. In other words, opponents are winning their battle on the perimeter. They're getting into the paint. And what that does is it basically it throws the plan out the window. And it forces you to react, in some cases scramble. That's where we get to things like, regardless of what we heard coming in, if we want our bigs near the rim. And Doc talked about this after the game tonight, too. You didn't see it. Part of that was because you saw Memphis putting Brook Lopez in a lot of those actions. Part of it was we saw Giannis a number of times coming out there doubling Ja Morant. And I think that kind of speaks to the success that Ja Morant had through the first half. That was a big part of it. Of what, we got to do something to slow him down. And when you do that and you're the only rim protector on the floor, well, what does that mean? Backline cuts, guys behind you. It's open to run to the rim. How many times did we see Ja Morant throw that floater to someone? That Bulls game, though, I mean, it was like a scab that hadn't properly healed. The Bulls picked at it, and now every other team is there. Just getting those paint touches, forcing the defense to make some type of reaction, that's where you see those situations of Brook Lopez having to close out to a corner because no one else is there. Brook Lopez being pulled away from the action because of getting into the paint and pulling him away from the rim, forcing him to put a body on whoever that is, whether it was Kobe White, Zach LaVine, you name it, that was getting into the paint. And tonight it was basically Ja Morant and Scottie Pippen Jr. doing the same thing, setting up that exact same action of the pick and roll. I think what you're seeing is, you know, I'm not going to pass a judgment and say, well, they just don't have the horses to do this. Remains to be seen. I think there were some encouraging things from the young guys, or one particularly that we saw this evening. But, you know, it's not just Jrue Holiday. It's been more than that. You've lost more than Jrue Holiday on the perimeter. Billy Donovan, speaking to the Bulls, he was the first one to mention this last year. When everybody was talking about focusing on the trade-offs you were getting of Damian Lillard's offense versus Jrue Holiday's defense, he was quick to point out, and I remember the first time the Bucks played the Bulls, when Billy Donovan pointed this out, and then we heard a few other coaches mention it too. Like, well, it wasn't just Drew. You know, like, I don't think they were trying to insinuate that Grayson Allen was an all-defensive capable player, but Grayson Allen was assignment sure. I know we had that conversation a lot. It was almost unfair to look back at that Celtics series because that's where a lot of the angst around Grayson Allen and especially his defense formulated. You saw the Boston Celtics just exploit the perimeter. I mean, this really dates back to then. And I think there was a lot of blame tossed the way of Grayson Allen. But you know, a few of us had mentioned, what do you want from him? Like, this looks different if Chris Middleton didn't slip on a wet spot. You're asking less minutes of Grayson Allen. He doesn't have to take on those assignments. I mean, he's going to have to take some of them, but not to the volume that he did. Wesley Matthews. I mean, and look, I think we've seen it hit the end of the road for Wesley Matthews, but the last real effective year that he had left, he gave you that same season. You just had those two that were able to, as Billy Donovan put it, be junkyard dogs, to just clamp down defensively and keep you in any game. I know I mentioned this. It was the offense in the half court that had been the issue for the Bucks all throughout that playoff run. But your defense at least kept you in games. That was the genesis for the trade of, we can't keep asking this of our defense. Sooner or later, it's going to break. And I think we have seen that. I don't think it's fair to say the offense is not going to be good enough, or at least be to the level that you hoped when you made this trade, to say it's a moot point. You know, we saw those signs, and that to me is what is the most difficult part to come to grips with through these first five games. And it's not that there was no Joel Embiid. It's not that there was no Paul George. It's still a good Philadelphia team. I know you can look at the record and say, man, this team isn't very good. I mean, think about the Bucks last year. You've overhauled that much of your team. It's going to take time, but those are talented players. Better players they've assembled than they had a year ago. So I can't just dismiss that and throw the baby out with the bathwater and say, well, wasn't the real Sixers, and that was the only win that this team has. Because of the process of how they got that win, it was everything we had hoped you would see leading up to the start of the season. All the minor nitpicks, all the things that we had picked apart and said, this has to be better. I want to see this. I want to see a third score. I want to see balanced scoring. I want to see better bench production. I would like to see better defense on the perimeter. You got all of that and more. Offense was never stagnant. Even those that want Giannis to be a traditional big, and hey, play with his back to the basket, play like Hakeem. He was basically doing that and took a backseat to Damian Lillard in that game. Like, that's what the most inexplicable part of all of this is you saw it for 48 minutes. And you haven't seen anything close to it since. I mean, I think for three quarters, you saw large parts of it against the Celtics. But the difference was the setup to that game, the previous two games, and how that went. And I think how that had people on edge and a bit defensive and not quite sure what to expect. But even in that Celtics game, you could see, man, this is just a better team. There is no margin for error. And there were these types of turnovers or wasted offensive possessions that you just knew you can't do this against the Boston Celtics. And that's where we're already at this point in the season, that we've already started to have those conversations of margin for error, climbing out of a hole, and superior talent. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Do have a text, which I think this is probably a shared opinion by a lot of our audience. In my opinion, the Bucks just haven't been in championship form since Coach Bud was fired. Really wish he was still here. Motivated the team, effective, had effort. They just haven't been the same. I don't think now is the time to relitigate the coaching change or changes that spawned from that. But I understand the discussion that awaits there of panic. Just as some of you are probably, if not fully hovered over and already pressing that panic button, you're getting close. There's something to be said for, do we make a panic move? Do we wait for this thing to right the ship? And I think at this point, what you've seen, again, it's five games. You still have 77 left. And I know I said I thought the Bucks were going to beat the Celtics. For three quarters, it looked pretty good. And I know going into that, even after you lost to the Bulls and the Nets, the point was, well, look, if you beat the Celtics and you're 2-2, and your wins are against Philly, albeit without Paul George and without Joel Embiid, but against Philly and Boston, like, yeah, it's disappointing that you lost those two games, but how much of a talking point is this? Well, that's gone now, because then you lost to Boston, and then you lost to Memphis. But I'm going to do it one more time. What if you do sweep the Cavaliers in this two-game set? Like, as bad as it has looked, it's still very early, and there's still time to turn this around. But to me, the big takeaway is it is not one thing that you need to fix. There is a number. Some of those Doc Rivers talked about after the game. I do want to get to some of that. Also interesting was comments Doc Rivers made before the game, both about Chris Middleton and other players on minutes restrictions, as he told us. And I mentioned what we saw from a young guy. Like, I do wonder about Andre Jackson Jr. Is this Ajax's his crack, the rotation, and he's here to stay? Because for the last two games, it kind of felt like it. And I know, you know, I haven't been as firm of a supporter of you just got to do everything you can to get him on the floor because of the offensive fit. And because of, you know, in terms of his athleticism, the lineups that make the most sense are when Ajax is on the floor with Giannis. And we saw that for a decent amount of time tonight. And we saw the Bucks make some charges. But I think at this point, with what you're continuing to see from the perimeter, you know, the cons to this, when you do your pro-con analysis, you almost have to ignore them and say, look, we just have to focus on the pros, because this part, our perimeter defense and our defensive intensity and athleticism, this has to change. And this is a guy that can do it for us. A couple of calls to get to is, again, I would assume it is going to be a heavily panicked group that we're dealing with tonight. The Milwaukee Bucks, now 1-4 to start the season, with four very difficult matchups in their next five games. You are nowhere near out of the most difficult portion of this yet. 855-616-1620 is the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. We'll head out to the phone lines, hear your thoughts, and revisit some of those comments from Doc Rivers after this on Bucks Talk.
The Round Ball Repartee returns. This is Bucks Talk.
1-4 start for the Bucks, who lose to the Grizzlies tonight in Memphis. A lot to a little, 122-99, the final. I do want to revisit some of the things that Doc Rivers had to say before and after the game. Very different tone in both of those appearances. And a little more to get to on Andre Jackson Jr. But let's head to the phone lines first and hear from you in where you're at. Level of concern or panic for this team, now at 1-4, as I mentioned, that is tied for the worst record in the Eastern Conference. 855-616-1620 is that number to join us. Let's head to the phone lines and check in with Jim in Mequonago.
Hey, Justin, great show. I got to listen to some of the game and watch some of the game. And I've noticed since the beginning of the year, what worries me is the body language of these guys. It just does not, they look like they got dead legs. Like you saw tonight, the alley-oops and looking at the bench, guys are just there. They're not getting up, clapping. Let's go. Let's go. It just, what worried me, Justin, this reminded me of last year when they signed Lopez and Middleton. I wasn't against it. But what worried me was that in basketball, you can get old quick. And I remember that game in Toronto last year. It was the sixth or seventh game of the year. It just started off, and they were in Toronto. I remember watching that game. Toronto was doing a ball swing, and they were just a step late in everything. The ball just was staying ahead of them. And that was the one thing that worried me, is that this team is getting older. And in basketball, when they won the championship, you've got that small window when you really have a chance to get to the conference finals, get to the championship again. It just, in a nutshell, Justin, what worries me is the body language. It just does not look like, it looks like they're not there. It's the beginning of the season. Little pep in the step, little jump, little extra jump. You know, it just, enthusiasm, I just don't see it. What do you think? I mean, did you notice anything?
I mean, it does not look great. You know, like, I don't know how to put my finger on it, but...
Me neither. And I just have, for as long, Justin, as I've been watching basketball for 40-some years, religiously, and it just, usually at the beginning of the year, the guys have enthusiasm, smiles on the face. It just does not look like they want to be there. And people have asked me, Jim, what's up with the Bucks, you know? And I said, I don't like the body language. And I don't know what happened or if something's going on that we don't know about. I don't know. But I just do not like what I read, Justin, and I'm a little worried.
Well, and
like you said, I agree with you 100%, Justin, about Andre Jackson Jr. Look, I don't have a lot of offense, okay? But whoever I'm guarding, I'm going to make you work. You're going to get your points in that, but I'm going to make you work for those points. Get them in there. And it just seems like they get boat raced. When they're not hitting their shots, they're done. These teams know, like you said, get out and go. These opponents know it. Just wait. They miss, just go. Just go. And that's what teams are doing. They were doing that all last year. What do you think?
Yeah, thanks for the call, Jim. You know, look, it is fair to point out it's been a horrifically bad shooting stretch for the Bucks. I mean, if they shoot better from three tonight, do they win? Maybe, but I think that's kind of glossing over everything else that we've witnessed here in this four-game stretch. I guess I'm just there with Andre Jackson of, you know, figure out how to make it work offensively, because I think you've reached the point that he just has to be a part of the rotation now because of the athleticism. And look, he had 5 fouls tonight. I mean, we talked about this last year that young players by nature get that whistle more, but Andre's also an aggressive defender, which, you know, many coaches will tell you is a good thing. That oftentimes with young players, you're really trying to get them and urge them to be more aggressive and physical. It's not the case with Andre, but it's an incredibly high foul rate. It is still a work in progress at best offensively. But, you know, I think the bigger takeaway is it doesn't matter what you're doing offensively. If you're just trading buckets, and think about every time the Bucks went on a mini charge, it was a 9-3 run at one point. Memphis would answer, where it would go from 31 to 22, and then before you knew it, it was 28 again. You couldn't sustain it, and the reason for that is, look, if you're going to climb out of a 20-point hole, you either have to be shooting the lights out or your defense just has to clamp down. And the Bucks got neither of the two tonight. How do you fix that? I mean, again, the shooting is going to be better. Those shots are going to drop. That was the most perplexing part about tonight, was those are really good looks. A lot of them were open looks. Wide open looks, even. From good shooters. You know, the volume of threes that you got were from the guys you want taking a high volume in Dame and Gary Trent Jr. Maybe you would push back and say, well, Torian Prince, maybe not so much. Now, Brooke Lopez hit 3 of 6 threes tonight. Your best shooters were the ones that were missing. And I mean, Giannis, how efficient he was too. You did not have a third score. You didn't have a second score tonight. So part of it is, look, if there's no help, you're probably not going to win this game anyway, but you're definitely not going to if that's the defense that you get. And in terms of easy fixes, you know, everybody can go to the trade machine and figure out how you move this player and how you move that player and how you package these guys. There is no easy fix that's out there for this group. You know, you kind of, like, this is what you saddled up with. And you knew that. You knew it was an older group, and you knew this may well be the last run for this team. Because of age, because of contract situations, and because there's no easy fix that's out there. You don't have any second-round picks. You don't have control of your first-round picks until 2030. You're in that second apron, so you can't. I know it's going to come up quite a bit in these next few days of why don't we just trade Pat Connaughton and this player for another player? Because you can't do that. You can't aggregate contracts in the second apron. Like, you're basically stuck with your team and veteran minimums, which the Bucks got three pretty good vet minimums this summer. But, you know, one of the things that we cautioned, I know Brandon and I have talked about this. I've talked about it on other shows, too. I don't think it's disputable. The roster is better than it was a season ago. The individual upgrades, you brought in better players. If we're just comping them to who, in theory, they're replacing. Delon Wright is better than Pat Beverly. Torian Prince is better than Jay Crowder. Gary Trent Jr. overall is better than Malik Beasley. But the big part of this is, sure, you got better. So did the rest of the conference. And is your better going to be enough? 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. A few more texts to get to that paint a very, very dark future for this Bucks team. That is the direction it seems like a lot of you have taken this. So we'll get to those texts that are coming in and revisit some of those quotes from Doc Rivers after this.
The Hardwood Homilies continue after this. This is Bucks Talk. This is Bucks Talk.
/122 to /99, the final in Memphis. The Grizzlies easily take care of the Bucks and send the Bucks to a 1-4 start on the season. Another texter points out lack of faith in the Bucks even making the playoffs. At least the Bucks won't have to worry about making the playoffs unless a team with 19 wins makes it. And look, he adds to why get rid of Griffin for Rivers. I've seen a lot of that. I know it is, it's like the Jon Snow meme where you're just out there on an island by yourself against an entire army if you choose to defend Doc Rivers. But it's not an apples to apples comparison. The schedules were far different. Doc Rivers has had a far more challenging schedule than Adrian Griffin had through those first 43 games, when I think the Bucks had the second easiest schedule in the league. You know, even say, hey, this team looked better before the coaching change. They didn't. You know, like, I think we need to revisit some of those games and revisit some of these shows where a lot of the talking points were, yeah, the Bucks won, but like, why did they need overtime to beat the Pistons twice? Why was this a close game? Why did it go down to the wire against the Charlotte Hornets? And it wasn't just one-offs. That's what was happening regularly. So no, like, I think if we even checked your receipts, you would not be saying it looked a lot better under Griff. It hasn't been good enough under either coach. No, that's the reality. And I mean, I don't think we're quite there yet, because that is the last conversation to have. But, you know, at some point, if it doesn't look any different, well, then it's a more broad conversation, because we would be talking about essentially three different head coaches where it looked largely the same. Is that the coach or coaches in that matter? We're not there yet, but it could get very late, very early here with a 1-4 start. And again, a very challenging next five games. Two with the Cavs, the Knicks, the Celtics, the Utah Jazz. Hey, you can't even sleep on the Utah Jazz. Not just for the fact that you've lost to the Brooklyn Nets, the Chicago Bulls, and now a Memphis Grizzlies team that did have Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. and their lottery pick in Zach Edey, but they did not have Desmond Bane or Marcus Smart. But, I mean, maybe the low point of last year came from the Utah Jazz, or one of the low points. You had one in Memphis as well, who, you know, death taxes and the Memphis Grizzlies just having their way with the Bucks under Taylor Jenkins. The two largest wins in franchise history for the Grizzlies are victories over the Bucks, and they've both occurred recently. But the Utah Jazz, I mean, I vividly remember that game too. Shortly before you made the coaching change, when the Jazz had a 33-point lead at halftime in Milwaukee in a game that looked and felt a lot like tonight felt. And I think that's what is the most troubling part of all of this to all of the fans that have, you know, essentially, or especially, I should say, been heavily invested since the 2018-19 season. When you started to see, wow, this is our Bucks. They're doing this now, and their assignment, sure, they play defense. This is actually a good team and a well-coached team that, you know, the last year plus has just been a slow deterioration from that you can't quite put your finger on. And we had somebody bring up the body language. We've had a few mention the coaching, young players, right? It's not just one thing. And that's, I think, what the biggest struggle here is. You know, again, I'm not in the look for a contingency plan post Chris Middleton, move on and trade Chris. I've tried as best I can to point out and articulate his value and where we're maybe missing some of that. They will be better when he's back. I get the frustration that he's not there through the first five games and that we had to kind of, oh, by the way, learn that he had surgery in the offseason during a summer league game. And I get the here we go again notion with that. But they will be a better team when he's back on the floor. But is he going to improve enough of the things that they're really struggling with right now? And that's the part that I don't have an answer for. I think that's what leaves you scratching your head the most and very unsure about where this is headed right now. Doc Rivers, before the game, was asked about some of the lineups because, you know, there's a lot that stands out. I mean, I mentioned the transition defense and, again, just what Memphis was able to do tonight. Like, if you remember one thing from this show, should be that, what Memphis did in transition and what a 200 offensive rating in those situations means, that it's basically a guaranteed basket every single time down the floor. But transition defense has been an issue again for this team. You know, they've done a pretty good job at limiting the amount of opportunities that opponents are getting in transition, which was one of the big issues before the coaching change. Man, we're giving up way too many of these. Well, you're not giving up as much, but opponents are even more efficient in those spots now. So why is that? And I think Doc talked about that a little bit after the game tonight of, look, there's still some of those little things, and part of it, I'm sure, is frustration, discipline, as he said. I just have to demand more as a coach, pointed out more, which I'm already doing and my staff is already doing, but at some point there has to be consequences for it. That, to me, was the most interesting part to take away from his post-game commentary. You know, we heard after the Celtics game, Doc Rivers saying, we still feel good about where this is headed. We wish we had more wins, but I can feel it building here. And I think it was before the game tonight, too. He said, you know, we're gonna go on a run here. I can feel it, and it's going to be relatively soon. Well, that was not the tone we heard from Doc Rivers after the game. And, I mean, how could it be after what he just witnessed? But that part about the discipline and, you know, I'm already pointing this out, but I suppose we have to do it more. And there has to be consequences. I go back to Andre Jackson Jr. getting out there for these last two games. And getting out there early, it wasn't just garbage time, all right, we'll play him. It was early in these games, in the first half. That, to me, is the part that stands out of there has to be consequences. Who did he take the minutes from? You know, I get the frustration. I get the angst. And it's easy to fall into the groupthink of Doc Rivers doesn't play young guys. A lot of coaches don't. But if you're tasked with that, if that's your roster makeup, where you heard John Horst say, we have six key veteran guys that are a part of this group, that have been a part of this group. Pat Connaughton in that mix. Bobby Portis in that mix. When you have that mix of, here's some guys that we've seen do it, but maybe we're starting to have some questions. And then we have these young guys, which, you know, have shown us moments. Like last year, think about the growth we saw from A.J. Green. I know everybody loved Ajax last year. And this year, same thing. Why isn't Andre Jackson Jr. playing more? Well, I think it's simple. And I think that answer from Doc Rivers makes you believe that's about to change. There has to be consequences and accountability. When you have that split, you're going to give your veteran every chance in the world to win that. Like, he has to lose his spot before you turn to the young guy. A rookie, second-year pro, doesn't matter who it is. You're not going to start with that. More often than not, I should say. You're not going to start with that, because what happens if that guy falters? What happens if that guy struggles? And then you have to worry about some of the things Doc Rivers said last year about Pat Connaughton. We got to get Pat Connaughton's confidence back. Well, Pat Connaughton was a multi-year veteran who had been a part of a championship team that didn't really have the equity put in that a guy like Andre Jackson Jr. or A.J. Green has. So you are going to give him every opportunity to fail before, and this isn't a single out Pat, it's vets in general, before you move on to the young guys. And I think what we've seen the last two games and what we just heard Doc Rivers say about consequences and accountability, I'm not saying this is just play all of them. You're going to see Andre. You're going to see A.J. Johnson. You're going to see my guy Chris Livingston. But I do wonder if that was Doc Rivers essentially admitting, look, we've tried it. It's not working. So now we're going to have to infuse some of that youth. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Still a few minutes left on the show. I do want to get to some other comments that Doc made before the game as well, specifically about his lineups. And, I mean, he didn't go into the specifics, but there are some lineups that just aren't working. We'll get into that coming up next.
Welcome back to Bucks Talk.
So we heard from Doc Rivers that, I mean, a clearly frustrated Doc Rivers. How is he supposed to be after this one? The offense, as we mentioned, I mean, you didn't get much outside of Giannis. You missed a lot of shots. A lot. But one of the more troubling aspects of really three of these losses is the fact that, well, two, I should say, this one and the Nets. No. And even the Celtics, by their standard, it's not as though these teams had hot shooting performances where it was just like, well, what are we supposed to do? It was there for the taking if you could just make shots. And unfortunately, the Bucks have not in these past few games. But the perimeter defense, I mean, I hate to sound like a broken record because I know we talked about it so many times a year ago. And I think at the very least, you were optimistic it was going to be improved this year. Was it going to be improved to mean this team was a top five defense? No, I don't think so. But I know coming in, and again, the caveat here is it's five games. There are still 77 remaining. You could get Chris Middleton back. You could get this influx of young players. Maybe it means Andre Jackson Jr. playing more. Maybe we see Ajax and A.J. Green as big staples of your rotation now. And you go with more switchable defenses when you become healthy. And all of a sudden, things fall into place. That could still happen. But, you know, for five games, it looks like it did last year with the perimeter defense being as problematic as it is. Memphis got into the paint and they got anything they wanted. The two-man game between John Morant and Zach Edey or Brandon Clark or Jaren Jackson, it rinse and repeat, and we've seen it from so many teams. As Doc said, we got to go back to the drawing board and do things better. We're not panicking and not overhauling things yet, but we just have to do things better. You know, hearing back to the drawing board, hearing consequences and accountability, just hearing how short some of Doc Rivers' answers were. It was a different version of Doc than we had heard. Consequences and discipline were two words that were brought up quite a bit. Now, before the game, Doc was asked about some of the lineups because some of these groupings have not been good. I think what stands out the most is some of the Bucks' best lineups on the floor have been centered around Damian Lillard and Brooke Lopez. I think part of that is the staggering. You know, I think it's pretty clear, and we saw this last year too. The stagger is Giannis and Chris, Dame and Brooke. Like, those two sets of guys, that's where the chemistry is. Brooke is a tremendous screen setter. He can stretch the floor for Dame, but he frees him up with those picks. You know, it's when Dame was at his best and he had Yusuf Nurkic setting those screens for him in Portland. You see the same thing from Brooke Lopez. Giannis and Chris and that chemistry that, you know, has baked together for over a decade. But you don't have Chris yet. So it's been kind of strange groupings of Giannis in a bench-heavy lineup. And we've seen a lot of Giannis and Bobby together. And those are defensive lineups that the Bucks have really struggled in. And as Doc said, you know, we know some of those lineups don't work. But you guys don't know that some guys are on minutes restrictions right now. So we just got to make the best of it. The insinuation there was DeLon Wright. And DeLon Wright did have a couple of minor, I don't know if injury is the right word, but things he was working through towards the end of the preseason and training camp. But you just have to find consistency and scoring and figure out those groupings that work. Like, that's what I take the back to the drawing board to mean from Doc Rivers. Like, my two read between the lines is those consequences. I think if you go back and watch these games, if you go back and watch transition moments, I think you can see who he's referring to with there's going to be consequences. And I think the benefactor is Andre Jackson Jr. of, look, we said this has to get better. We said you have to be here. We said you can't lose your man, and it's happening. So we're going to try this guy. And back to the drawing board, I think, is a part of that, too, of, all right, let's see one of these lineups that we've never seen before. Let's see more of this. Who fits with who? Like, it is a different team. I know a large portion of this is a group of guys that have been here for the most part since 2018. But there's still new groupings that you're learning. When you talk about overhauling three key bench guys that are new, that's what I think the back to the drawing board means. But there is no such thing as too early to really start to focus on this because of your start. I mean, because of the fact that Philadelphia is also 1-3. There's been a lot of teams off to a slow start in the Eastern Conference. The Pacers, they were 1-3 before they beat the Celtics. Sixers, as we mentioned, 1-3. They hope to get Joel Embiid on the floor Saturday, but that's not a guarantee. But conversely, the Bulls have been playing pretty good. The Cavs are 5-0. The Celtics look like the Celtics. The Knicks kind of feel like the Bucks a year ago. They look okay. I mean, they're 2-2. It's not what you expected it would be. And that's the larger point, is there's starting to be a lot of separation that you could already see taking place early in the season of, are the Cavs and Celtics right now just on that level? Bucks have disappointed. Sixers haven't been healthy. Knicks have disappointed a little bit. Like, are we seeing a separation at the top and everybody else is fighting over 3 through 8? That's the danger. Is, you know, a 1-4 starter worse, it puts you in that conversation where all of a sudden you're in the mix with those teams where you're going to need to rattle off like 10 of 13 in the win column. That's the spot you didn't really want to be in. But now you're here. And now you got a chance to move into that direction Saturday night. So we will briefly touch on that matchup with the Cavs, what to expect, what the Bucks could be stepping into, and wrap things up after this on Bucks Talk.
This is Bucks Talk.
Well, a chance to bounce back in a big way Saturday night when the Bucks return home to take on the red-hot Cleveland Cavaliers. They are 5-0 on the young season. That is the best record in basketball. They have the best point differential in the Eastern Conference, the second best in all of the league. They've been tremendous in the second half. So that's one of the things to keep an eye on, third quarters especially. I mentioned this before the game. The Bucks have had some real issues in the third quarter every game this season. Dead last in defensive rating in third quarters coming into tonight. Second worst net rating. They're scoring a lot of points in the third, but they're giving up even more. And they were outscored by 7 points in that third quarter tonight. Points in the paint. Again, maybe the raw scoring from the paint has not been a huge issue for the Bucks, but opponents getting into the paint has. Paint touches, spraying it out on the perimeter and finding better looks. Cleveland is a team that can not only do that, they can also score in the paint. They're averaging about 57 points per game in the painted area. The Bucks give up 46. So something's got to give there. But it ultimately just boils down to perimeter defense. You know, you're not expecting to shut down Donovan Mitchell. Not expecting to shut down Darius Garland, who's been very good so far to start the season, but you have to slow them down. It cannot be what you saw tonight. It cannot be what you saw against the Chicago Bulls. You cannot have a 200 defensive rating in transition against the Cavs or any team for that matter, or the results you saw tonight will not change. Saturday night, 7 o'clock tip from Fiserv Forum. 6:30 is when our pregame coverage begins on these airwaves. And as always, be sure to stick around after the game for Bucks Talk. We will talk to you then.